is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Uhibe in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I think we have a moral obligation to look at the equity when we look after access to vaccines and not leaving anyone behind. But it is also important that we understand that, as we have been saying from the onset of this pandemic, no one is safe until everyone is safe.
That was Mohamed Fall, Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa, on word that the U.S. is not pulling out of the World Health Organization after all. Details coming up. Also, Africans anticipate warmer ties between their continents with the election of U.S. President Joe Biden. These stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. African health officials are welcoming the decision by the United States not to leave the World Health Organization, saying the nation has long been a source not just of funding, but of expertise. Meanwhile, Africa is preparing to receive and distribute another 600 million coronavirus vaccines. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Welcome back, America. That's the message that African health officials are sending to the new U.S. administration after Joe Biden, in one of his first acts as president, formally stopped his nation's withdrawal from the World Health Organization. African officials say they're hopeful the reunion will help their continent's fight against the coronavirus. Africa has reported 2.3 million confirmed cases, more than half of them in South Africa. Former President Donald Trump cut off U.S. funding to the WHO in April, saying the U.N. agency was virtually controlled by China. The withdrawal would have gone into effect in July, but President Biden's Wednesday executive order cancels it. Dr. Matsidisa Moeti, WHO's regional director for Africa, told journalists she was on the Thursday morning call when Dr. Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor to the president, informed global health officials that the U.S. is back in. She says this matters not just because the U.S. is the world's wealthiest nation, though, of course, that counts for a lot.
So the potential impact on the financing of WHO and therefore our work was actually extremely significant after the decision was taken to withdraw from WHO. And then secondly, as we've said many times, the importance of this member state, which has a very extensive capacity in public health, in global health, in various institutions that have been working in the multilateral sphere with WHO, with other partners, has been extremely important.
So far, Moeti said she's not aware of any current plan for the United States to share vaccine doses with the continent. Moeti said she's buoyed by the fact that the Biden administration also enrolled the U.S. in the COVAX vaccine distribution program, which seeks to provide equitable access for lower-income countries. Mohamed Fall, UNICEF's regional director for Eastern and Southern Africa, said that global access is critical.
It's not me first, but it's we first. I think we have a moral obligation to look at the equity when we look after access to vaccines and not leaving anyone behind. But it is also important that we understand that, as we have been saying from the onset of this pandemic, no one is safe until everyone is safe. Moving and continuing the global engagement, continuing to promote the solidarity, continuing to promote multilateralism, would be an extremely important step before we get rid of this pandemic.
So far, he said the continent has secured 600 million vaccine doses through the COVAX facility, in addition to the provisional 270 million doses that the African Union has promised. He also said that on the continent, public health officials are trying to ensure that rural residents get equitable access to the vaccine compared to their urban counterparts. This won't be an easy job, said Tabani Maposa, managing director of country programs for Gavi, the global alliance that works to create equal access to vaccines for children living in the world's poorest countries.
The job of rolling out vaccines, it's an unprecedented logistical scale of work that has not been seen in recent times. The logistics part of it we can do, but the biggest challenge is the hearts and minds. And the hearts and minds really is about the level of misinformation and the conspiracy theories that continue to flow amongst our people. And I will say again, It may have been a dark 2020, but 2021 is dawn.
So even in this bright new year, the doctors repeated the same now familiar advice. Wash your hands, wear your mask in public, stay home if you can, and take precautions. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
As a second wave of COVID-19 fills South Africa's hospitals and graveyards, there are growing concerns that the government's pledge to vaccinate two-thirds of its 60 million people is hopelessly optimistic. Darren Taylor has more.
As each day passes, filled with new deaths and infections, but without the vaccinations needed to end the pandemic, skepticism about South Africa's plan intensifies. The unease is justified. Jabbing 40 million people in the next 11 months would mean a shot in the arm for almost every adult in the country.
It would be very unrealistic, given that we don't have any commitments to doses at this stage.
Wits University health systems expert Alex van den Heuver says a good vaccination program needs three elements: access to vaccines, a proper rollout strategy, and the convincing of people who are hesitant to get the jab to indeed take it.
Of those three elements, we're still stuck at the first level. We don't have commitment beyond 1.5 million doses, and we don't really know when they will arrive and how they will be distributed. Government has been caught napping. They haven't really done their job during 2020, and this has really put South Africa in a very difficult position.
The state has released a rollout plan which, on paper, looks impressive. However, critics point out that the government is notorious for putting out plans that look good, but that are ultimately destroyed by mismanagement or corruption, and sometimes both. Infectious diseases specialist Professor Shabir Madi says given that South Africa is still struggling to procure vaccines, the health department's promise to inoculate so many so quickly astounds him.
I think our focus really for the rest of 2021 needs to be centered around the immunization of healthcare workers and people at high risk of developing severe disease and dying of COVID-19, rather than being too ambitious and failing on multiple fronts.
Mardi says government planning for the vaccine rollout has been inadequate.
To deploy a vaccine at scale, even to reach 15 million people, takes months of planning and not weeks of planning.
The health department denies it only recently began planning for the rollout and insists that the only factor preventing it from starting vaccinations is a lack of vaccine due to worldwide shortages. It says its plan isn't proceeding well because the World Health Organization's COVAX facility says it's only able to give South Africa 6 million vaccines this year, and only in April. A representative of the Opposition Democratic Alliance, or DA party, Jordan Hill Lewis, calls it a lame excuse.
It was absolutely clear from the very beginning that COVAX would only provide for 10%. So it's incredible. Unbelievable, actually, that the government put all its eggs into the COVAX basket and did nothing to plan for the other 90% of the country. We see other countries rolling out vaccines by the million, and here we sit with not a single dose in country.
There are also doubts about the state's budget of 20 billion rands for vaccines. Van den Heuver, who's also a health economist, believes it to be way over the top.
We could probably expect to pay about 10 billion rand in total. That leaves a sort of a big question mark over what they intend to spend the additional 10 billion rand on. It really worries me because there is immense scope within the vaccine strategy to direct funds to for improper purposes.
The DA has filed a court case in an attempt to force the government to reveal a step-by-step breakdown of costs for its vaccine rollout plan. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
With Joe Biden newly installed as the 46th U.S. president, Some Africans say they anticipate warmer ties between their continent and America. For example, they expressed hope that he would fulfill his pledge to roll back his predecessor's travel ban on people from Muslim-majority countries, which he did on his first day in office. Still, others dismissed Biden's inauguration as a non-event for Africa. They expect the new president will be preoccupied with COVID-19 and domestic challenges. Our VOA Africa Division colleagues spoke with people all over the continent. A man from Somalia talked about hope for better U.S.-Africa, which generally have been strained.
Many things are expected from the new president. We want him to bring reforms. As you know, we are going through very difficult times, so we want him to first reverse the travel ban imposed on Muslim countries. We had tough times with the previous administration, and we expect the new administration to change the course and open up.
A woman from Nigeria says she is eager to see what impact that Kamala Harris can have.
I'm really happy and looking forward to this new beginning, particularly with a female vice president, Madam Kamala Harris. And I'm looking forward to what she can bring to the table. I'm sure she's the first, but she will not be the last. So I'm excited about the future of females and what females can bring to the table.
A man from Kenya likes the potential for trade policy under Biden.
Africa can profit from the trade policies that Joe Biden is proposing. We know that countries that have huge debt from China are from Africa. Biden is saying there should be fair trade, and he's taking this approach as an international approach, and he's asking other countries to pressure China to have fair trade practices, and that's applying the loans that African countries took from China. So we're expecting a new approach in Biden administration.
A man from the Democratic Republic of Congo sees Biden's goal of ending racism as critical for the African diaspora.
We have seen the level of racism in the United States after the death of George Floyd. Hopefully, the new president will be able to work on that, fight racism, but also help the integration of young immigrants from Africa into American society.
And a man from Senegal sees the possibility of global change that could benefit Africa.
I think the nomination of Joe Biden will be much more important for multilateral cooperation with Europe, Russia, and Africa. I think African countries will benefit more and will see a change in global geopolitics this year.
While the focus on COVID-19 has centered mostly on the impact on the healthy and the aging, Zimbabwe's cancer patients have not been spared. Reporter Kudza Zadawashi has more from Harare.
The second wave of COVID-19 is raging in Zimbabwe, but life must go on. For cancer patients, that means continuing their chemotherapy despite a life-threatening virus lurking on the horizon. Junior Mavu is with the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe and says COVID-19 has affected cancer patients.
The COVID pandemic has affected generally all aspects of health, but especially for us is mobility of patients from wherever they are coming from to access our offices.
The Cancer Association supports patients with counseling and sometimes with medicine to complement their chemotherapy. Traveling has been difficult with most of the public transport sector grounded during lockdown, and Zimbabweans have been uneasy visiting hospitals. Mavu explains this trend.
There's fear that if one goes to the hospital, they might come back with COVID. So that's another challenge that we are also experiencing from cancer patients.
Zimbabwe's biggest hospital, Parenyatwa, draws cancer patients around the country for chemotherapy. But Linus Dire, spokesperson of the Parenyatwa group of hospitals, says they too have been affected by COVID-19.
We would like to advise our patients on chemotherapy and the general public that our radiotherapy center is not being spared by the effects of COVID-19. We are having some staff members and patients being infected, and this is posing serious risks to the department.
What's worse, Dire says, cancer puts the patients in the high-risk category.
Chemotherapy patients are vulnerable immunity may be impaired in disease. According to our chemotherapy, being infected by this virus soon after treatment.
Early this month, some cancer patients were turned away after the center temporarily closed. Dire adds that doctors are reviewing patients on a case-by-case basis while hospital authorities review all health protocols to safeguard both patients and staff. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinamashi from Harare.
After 3 years of bureaucratic wrangling, a healthy female leopard was finally flown from South Africa to Mozambique's Garangosu National Park. She made the three-hour flight in a custom wooden crate and was set free into the heart of the 4,000-square-kilometer park. Wildlife specialists hope that she will produce enough cubs with the Garangosu's one male leopard to begin to restore Garangosu's once teeming carnivore population, which was decimated during Mozambique's 15-year civil war. To find out more about the leopard's arrival and what it means to a complex ecosystem, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Paola Bulai, Garangosu's assistant director of conservation and the head of its large carnivore restoration project.
A leopard is actually one of the most widespread cats on Earth. In Africa, it is our only spotted large cat. They are a solitary cat, primarily nocturnal, and they tend to be unseen, but they're very much there. They're increasingly threatened and even facing endangerment because of loss of habitat and the impacts of hunting, both legal and illegal hunting.
Are leopards dangerous to people?
Well, they're not dangerous to people at all. They usually take small-bodied mammals, so like your impala and bushbuck and other small mammals that they've evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to hunt as part of these ecosystems.
It was quite some achievement to get her to you from South Africa, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it was such a difficult process for us. During one of the worst years most of us have experienced in a long time during this COVID-19 year, we managed to find a break in the permitting process. And before we knew it, we were flying one of the most beautiful animals I've ever seen across two international borders and giving her a safe home. And she's going to be the first of, we hope, many more to come, including hopefully the first cubs to be born in Garangosu National Park in a very long time. So we're closely monitoring that.
When she finally arrived in this huge crate from South Africa, what was your first experience of her?
When she landed in this crate and we were just moments away from releasing her, there were these peepholes in the top of the crate where I could actually see her and like look her in the eye. And at one point she locked eyes with me and just let out this roar, which froze me to death. I mean, it was awe-inspiring. I felt it in my hands. I was actually holding the lid of the crate down.
Tell us more about what she looks like.
She's incredibly beautiful. She has these huge, piercing eyes, long whiskers, and this beautiful colored spotted coat.
What color is her coat?
It's like an orange, gold, white, black coloration. So leopardy.
It sounds like you've already developed a bond.
You know, for one thing, I have an immense respect for her. She's made a long, long journey, and she's really sort of the frontier of this incredible recovery effort that's underway to really make a positive difference in terms of protecting biodiversity and turning the tide against extinction.
How confident are you that she will bear more leopard cubs to help repopulate the park?
In a sense, it is experimental. We did release her within range of a male that we've been tracking for a couple of years, so I don't think she'll have any problem pairing up with the male when they meet. But to really jumpstart a population, you need numbers, you need momentum. And so at this stage, she's really opened that door for us to show that we have the right kind of space for these animals to thrive. And so she needs to be the first of many more that we fly over to really get this population going.
I know you're counting on these leopards to prey on the baboons in Gongosa.
Absolutely. That's one of the ecological functions. They don't primarily prey on baboons, but they are the primary predator of baboons. And Gorongosa is notorious for its very large and widespread baboon troops. I mean, we have more than 200 troops in the park, and so that's thousands of baboons. And they've grown a bit lazy. Around dusk, you know, they'll hang out on the ground and they don't go up into the trees so quickly. And that is a sign to us of a missing element. In this case, it would be predation by a leopard. So I think they're going to be changing their behavior pretty soon now that she's around town.
That was Paola Bulai, Assistant Director of Conservation in Mozambique's Gorongosa National Park, and the head of its large carnivore restoration project. She was speaking to VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Aid group Doctors Without Borders says the humanitarian crisis in Mozambique is about to get worse with the onset of heavy rains and increased fighting between the government and the insurgents. For more, VOA's Chinedu Ofor reached Caroline Guardon, strategic support manager for the group in Mozambique. She says conditions are deteriorating.
We are very concerned. People are living now under the rain. People are living in overcrowded tents or shelters, and they don't have proper access to hygiene, clean water, and medical services. So we fear cholera outbreaks. People are at high risk of malaria, sleeping outside or not sleeping under mosquito nets. People are at risk, of course, of COVID. And I'm not speaking about basic diarrhea and respiratory infections.
How dire is the situation at the moment?
Part of the population is trapped in the areas where you have the attacks, and they are lacking everything, as there are no public services, as there are many health structures closed, for example, as it is dangerous to take the road, even to go to their field and to harvest. So access to the food is complicated, and they are now at high risk of malnutrition. They are, of course, the victims of the attacks, directly or indirectly. They are often taken into the fires between the army and the insurgents. More than 20% of the population has fled their villages, their districts.
How is the population coping with the shortages of almost all essentials and medical supplies?
In addition to these medical problems, the fact that basic medical services are not available for this population might create more problems. For example, for women who are pregnant and do not have access to basic follow-up of the pregnancy, or who are not able to give birth in a health center or hospital. I'm also speaking about people who have a chronic disease and who have no access, for example, to their treatment for tuberculosis or HIV.
That's Caroline Guadron, strategic support manager for the group Doctors Without Borders. She spoke from London with VOA's Chinedu Ofor. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA
Air brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.